Hello and welcome back to the Heart Song Yoga Podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we are doing a little deviation from our Eight Limbs of Yoga series to dive into very briefly the invisible barriers to a yoga practice. And by this we mean the sense that you know you should do yoga probably. We assume you have enough knowledge and or experience of it that you know, it's on your list of things you want to do in your life, but for some reason, it just doesn't seem to happen.
It's we've talked about it a few times, which is why we thought we needed to record this and share with you, because it's come up in different contexts, but more recently, it's come up through the online studio setting where people say, I just haven't been using it because no one's there to keep me accountable to a set time as it used to be when they'd tune into a scheduled live stream class.
Or go to a yoga class.
Or same thing, go to yoga class, have 2 weeks off for a break, and I haven't actually done any since we finished because there's no sort of commitment to it.
And they all walk out leaving kind of going, oh, yes, I'll keep practicing during the holidays, but very few people do. And it's not usually for a lack of wanting.
No.
And this is where,
No, it'd be really good to explore it because it's something I'd really like to help people overcome. And what can we look at and what is it? And, you know, is it a mindset? Do we need to put in a reward system or what is it? What is it that brings you back each week? What is it? Is it the feeling you leave with?
See, I don't think that's enough. Like simply feeling good after a yoga session, as much as at the time you think that will be enough to bring you back, it isn't. And I think perhaps this is something that especially for yoga teachers is difficult to comprehend because they're yoga teachers because they do come back. I don't imagine there are too many passionate yoga teachers who sort of force themselves to go do the training. I think it was just a pull. It's like, I am pulled to write every day. I don't need to set specific goals. I don't need to have a reward system. I don't need any of that to make myself sit down and write. And it's something that I just do. And so I imagine that perhaps for you, Sarah, you're kind of like that with your yoga. It is something that you just do or you want to do.
It is. It's almost like my body wants to do it. So it's natural for me to not go past a day, which isn't to say that, you know, there aren't a few days when I don't, if I'm away, but doing other things. But there is a need within me to want to have that sense of feeling I get from stretching and moving my body.
And so I think, I don't know, this is the challenge of it, and be very interested to hear what you think as well, other people. And but because I don't feel pulled to yoga at all. If I never did yoga again, I wouldn't miss it. Whereas if I never danced again, I would miss that.
Yes.
And if I never wrote a book, wrote another, you know, story again, I would miss that. And probably if I was never, you know, picked up a paintbrush or a pencil, they're the things that I am drawn to do. And if I don't do it for too long, I start getting antsy. So there's a pull there that gets over almost any barrier. Whereas something like a yoga practice or say doing weightlifting or, you know, going for exercise, I go for power walks. That's sort of an exercise that I find generally far more enjoyable. If I don't do it for too long, I will go out and do it. But certainly something like yoga, you do feel amazing when you've done it. It is certainly very powerful. It is important, or something like it is important. And yet still I have to make myself do it. So I suppose the challenge is, what if you don't have that pull, that intrinsic kind of just you're going to do it anyway, but you want to do something like this, then how can you push yourself instead? And how can you do that sustainably is the question. Because any kind of external sort of push inevitably won't last. Like it's, if you're relying on a yoga class every week, well, you know, those don't run forever. Eventually your teacher is going to move on or stop doing it move or something and you can't find another teacher you know, there'll be some other reason for that discontinuing and then you don't continue your practice. And so I think it's an interesting one. I don't really have any answers at this stage, but
I have been, when I've explored this in more in relation to meditation, because there seems to be barriers to the same, or for all the same reasons probably. So I remember Andrew Wells saying to me when I was doing my meditation teacher training years ago, you know, what find what is joyful in your practice. Is there an element of joy? What brings you joy in your practice that will be enough to keep you coming back to it? Can you find a joy in it? Can you find a joyful part of it? And it's almost like, you know, it's like if you can get to turn up, if you can show up, it's almost that's the biggest thing. Once you're there and you start, then it flows and you'll get whatever results.
And I would say that's true of pretty much anything that you know you want to do, and you know you'll, you know, get something out of, like going to the gym or going for a, you know, for a run if that's your jam, or you know, doing some body weight workouts or whatever it is. Certainly once you start, it's almost always easy to keep going.
Yes, and quite often then you might say, look, I'll just 10 minutes if it's all I give it. And once you get there, you often, well, my experience is that then I want to stay longer.
I think that's a good way of doing it. And certainly I've done that with sort of like make it something. So there's some sort of barrier in you, and there's probably a lot of psychological background that you could dive into as to why this might be the case. And we don't truly understand human motivation yet, if we ever will. So there's some sort of inertia you have to get over to start. And so making it something really accessible and very easy, so you can sort of trick your brain almost into doing it, because it won't take long and it'll be done.
Yeah.
And you can sort of tell yourself, the feeling of having this hovering in the future is annoying me, so I'm just going to, it's 5 minutes and I'm going to do it now.
Yes.
And once you start, you will find in most cases you're happy to keep going. And I certainly used to use that with the gym. You know, I would sort of go, you know what, I'm just going to show up and do bare minimum stuff. No outcomes required, no gains needed, nothing like that. And then when I got there, I would almost always find that I enjoyed it, and yes, and I would stay and do a full workout, but I didn't commit to that before I got there. And that helped a lot. That made it a lot easier. So, cause it's much easier to do five and better for you to do 5 minutes a day of whatever it is you're trying to do than do nothing. 1 hour a week and never do it, because an hour is just too big a thing to get to.
To carve that time out. So I think accessibility, and you know, ideally having a space, or if you haven't got a dedicated space, then at least having your mat very accessible so that you see it, that you walk past it, or that it's there very easily picked up and rolled out.
I think the obvious thing is remove all the barriers you can. Like if you have to clear an entire room's worth of furniture to make space to do your yoga, then you're just never going to do
it's
never
going to happen.
So that's important. And the other thing I've noticed that is nice about a class is you don't have to think about what to do, and you don't know what you're going to do. And there's something about that, for me at least, that is enticing. So it's like if I'm going on to, say, an online studio, I've got to design the class or the day's activities, right? I have to kind of go, okay, today I'm going to do this class with these things in it. And sometimes that's great because I have a particular niggle that I know I want to address. But other times I don't actually want to do that mental work, which sounds really silly because it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's more that I want what my brain is looking for at that point is some novelty. And it's like going to the gym. I used to really enjoy when I used to go with my partner and I didn't know what we were doing that day. He would just tell me what to do when we got there, and that was kind of fun because it would be like, what is this, you know, what am I going to do today? I don't know, let's find out. And there was an element of interest there that you miss when you're entirely self-directed. And I think that applies to everything. That applies to going to school. Like there was an element of, you know, the first day back at uni or school or something and not knowing what is on the syllabus for today. And I mean, maybe if you were conscientious you'd look up a class, you know, unit outlines, but even so, you don't know what you're going to learn that day, and it's exciting. And that kind of creates a pull. So you maybe looking for a way to bring that. Sorry?
And you don't have to think about it.
You don't have to think about it. And you don't. And so there's an element of wonder of like, oh, what am I going to do today? And so maybe that's something we need to look at. Like, how can you almost randomize that process?
Yeah, spin the wheel and see what class pops up for you today.
Press a button and something. Put all the components in a jar and pick out a few pieces of paper and see what they are, and that's what you do.
And that's what you do. Because the other thing is setting up a little bit of a ritual around it. If that, you know, everybody's some, there's not going to be one fix for everybody.
No.
And so we need to have a variety of sort of options. And one is to at least have maybe on a shelf or somewhere safe a candle. And that the practice is then that part of the practice is that this is your time. You're honoring yourself to take this time and to set the scene for that is the lighting of this flame. And as you light your candle in this space, you put your intent in or you put whatever you want to put in. You know, it's almost like a time. I'm setting this time for myself and this is, you know, this is my self-care, my intimate time with me. This is my opportunity to just check in with how am I going, how am I doing, to pause long enough in your day to at least ask the question about how you're traveling. And once you've lit that flame and if you could go into that reflective mode even and then just step back on your mat, and it might be sometimes you light the flame, you just sit and look at the flame. You know, yoga doesn't have to always be a physical practice, you know, as we are talking about with the eight limbs, it's all under the heading of yoga, which is to bring ourselves back to wholeness. So what brings you back to wholeness? And when we live in such a scattered world and such a busy world with so much pulling us in all different directions, can the simple act of lighting a candle be part of your intention to pull those scattered parts of yourself back for a few moments to sit with the flame and to let your eyes receive that light and see where then that takes you? Because after you've sat with that, you might then feel like, oh, I actually do want to just do a little bit of movement, or I would like to lie down, do a relaxation, or so that's one way of connecting, by sort of almost befriending this flame, this candle, whatever it is. And it's like it reminds me a little bit of a story called The Trouble Tree, which I've shared with a few people over the years. And to cut it short, it's basically this man comes home after his day at work, and this particular day he'd had a very stressful day and his car had broken down and a mate had to give him a lift home. And so his mate gave him a lift home, and before he invited his mate in and said, look, thank you, you've been so kind to me, just come in and meet my family before you go. And before he walked in the door, there was a tree near the doorway, and he paused and he touched the tree, and then he walked into the house with his workmate and they greeted and said hello, and then he saw him out, and his mate just couldn't help but say, before he said goodnight to him, I saw you do something with that tree. What was that? And he said, well, when I come home, I just pause at that tree and I touch it. And I leave my work there. I leave those troubles there. I unload what I don't need to take in through that doorway. And then when I come out the next day, I just pick up what I need to pick up to take with me for the day ahead. And most of the time, he said, I don't need half of what I put there the night before. It's like a trouble tree. So he puts them all there. Doesn't take those troubles on to anybody else. We all need some form of checking in with ourselves and coming back to and being responsible for what we're carrying around with us. So if you don't do it for yourself, what I'm getting at is if you're not able to be committed to doing it for yourself, then can you do it to benefit those around you who will benefit by you taking the time to draw the scattered parts of yourself back? And that might be looking at a flame, sitting quietly for 5 minutes. For others, it will be moving your body to release that from your physical form. But perhaps dedicating or intending that you're doing that for another purpose other than for you, if that's a barrier.
I mean, I think there's two sides to that. The other side is making sure that you understand the intention there and that you're not just bottling things away from your partner. Or your family, or your, you know, yourself even. But because it would be easy, I imagine, you know, there's a difference between really putting something down and out of your system or just shutting it away.
Yeah, these were little things that just made for a shitty day that probably isn't going to make any difference.
You don't need to carry that around.
Yeah, that, you know, the car broke down, the tire was flat, you know, the job ran over time, whatever they might be, not major, not major relationship things, but
no, but at the same time, like if my partner came home and had a day like that and, you know, talked through it, that would not, that would be therapeutic in itself. Different perhaps if you've got, you know, a larger family with children and who need your attention, your undivided kind of care. They don't want to hear that, but I think there's two sides to it. But the main, to me, the takeaway from that is that you need to do that for yourself in your practice. So if you go onto your yoga, you know, the entire half hour or hour period that you've given to yourself, and it's when you're guided by being in a group or going to a class or whatever, it's a bit easier to sort of have this done for you. But if you're doing it for yourself, it's quite difficult to not spend the whole time just ruminating on that stuff. I think. And you can easily get distracted by what's going on in your head, especially if there's nobody keeping you on the mat. So if you suddenly you just sort of have this cascade of stuff you've got to do around the house or for work or whatever it is, it's sort of easy to go, you know what, this isn't working, I'm just going to go and do more work.
And I guess there's always going to be days like that.
There is.
And I suppose there needs to be some form of self-discipline, which does hold you accountable to what you value, I suppose it comes down to.
We sort of had, I was discussing with a friend the sort of, you know, stress over to-do lists and family pressure and so on. And this idea that, like, you know, if stress is bothering you, like if it's sort of manifesting now in a physical way, like headaches or tension or whatever else, a lot of people, stress is closely linked to bowel issues like irritable bowel syndrome. So if that's something that bothers you, you might want to look at the relationship to stress. And that sometimes it feels like the only way to get rid of this thing will be to clear the list.
Yes.
Like, just push through and get everything done because that's the only way to get rid of it. And it's really not a helpful approach most of the time. Like there are going to be some jobs that you, you know, you're not doing it because you're putting it off, and the best thing to do is just get on with it and do it. But we do need to be able to figure out how to take time out of a day and out of a week and put all that stuff aside and still be present and relaxed. And we don't do it.
We don't do it. And it's almost like it's getting the balance back and taking some mini respites, you know, and they might only be 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there. But if you can build them in on a daily basis, before you know it, you've done an hour and a half that week that you wouldn't have done before. And if that means that you set your phone alarm to go off at a certain time, and that's your 5 or 10 minute allocation where you close your eyes and breathe, or you know, check in and ask the question, how am I doing? What's happening in my, are my shoulders up to my ears right now? Or those sorts of things. Then if you can just start to create that habit, that can grow. The other big changer of a mood, or perhaps in bringing joy in, is music. And if you can put on a piece of music, so you know you put your mat out, put on some music that really calls you, and see if you can bring some association in that does lift you and sort of draw you to want to move your body.
I would say put the music on before you even roll your mat out.
Maybe, yeah.
If you're feeling, and this will depend on the person, if you're the type of person who needs ritual and routine, and, you know, your whole process starts with going to the place, being present, lighting a candle, rolling out the mat, then make that work for you. But if that doesn't work for you, if that list of things to do puts you off, which is how I feel about it, it's put the music on first. Get some external sensory call going. And then let the music kind of change your gear a little bit, you know. And I would find then that if I put on upbeat, you know, sort of active music, well, then I'm going to feel like doing a workout. Five minutes later, I'll be in the spare room doing a workout, you know. Or if I put on relaxing kind of flowy music, well, that's going to call me to move in a more sort of relaxed way. So I think, you know, if there is a barrier to sort of taking that time, put the music on first. Set an alarm if you have to. When that alarm goes off, you put the song on. Or if you listen to playlists during the day, put those songs in your playlist, and when they come on, that's your cue to sort of change gears for a minute. And you might find, and then let it, and so do it with no pressure. Like if you're not getting to your yoga practice, put on the music that might make you think of doing a yoga practice, whether that's long, slow, ambient relaxation music, or whether it's sort of more flowing music, or it might be a classical type thing, or whatever it is. Put that on and then just see how you feel. And it might be that today it doesn't move you and you don't do it, and that's fine. And it might be on the other, on the next day, it does move you, and suddenly you go and you spend an hour in your practice. But if you don't have the expectation or the pressure, that sometimes helps me find more of a call to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Rather than I'm doing it because I should. It's almost always the worst reason to do something. So.
And the other thing is be open to what yoga means. And if you're tired and you just want to sit down and have a 10-minute relax, well, then that's fantastic. It doesn't have to be preceded by an activation and a sequence or body preparations. Lie down, have a relaxation. That is an amazingly healthful activity.
Probably the most healthful thing. Like, start with that.
Yes.
You're not getting a yoga practice in, start with the relaxation. Start with the relaxation. And then after a couple of weeks of just doing relaxations, then maybe you start to add in some other things.
Yeah. Because it is such a valuable thing to do. And 10 minutes or 15, 20 minutes, you'll be refreshed.
Yeah.
And it's got you down there and connected you into going inward. At the end of the day, it's all about, you know, trying to get that external focus away and come back to yourself.
Yep.
Come back to wholeness, come back to that inner space.
And recommit, I suppose, and we probably need to wrap this up, but I guess if you're in, say, an online yoga studio or a self-paced sort of scenario, or you're just trying to do your own thing, you know, just come back to that commitment. And make that a mantra. Stick it on the wall somewhere, or, you know, in your diary or on your computer screen or wherever it is you'll see it, that, you know, take a minute to come back to yourself.
Yeah.
And if that is your only focus for a month, you might be surprised at how much your mindset changes.
It's a lovely place to end. Yeah.
Yoga practice.
It's a good, yeah, put it in your diary as an appointment with yourself. Just as it would be as if you were going off to class or clicking onto a Zoom live. Just as important, just the same.
Yeah.
Good place to end. Thanks for that, Kel.
Thank you. We'll be back to talk next week.
Back to the niyamas next week. Okay, we'll see you then.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.